If you're our guest today, it's good to have you with us. If you have been out or whatever, we have been going through the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. We've arrived at verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. This really is talking about when you unfold it, how the heart has to be right, has to be pure, and what is wrong with the heart. We're going to look at that quickly, because change is difficult for all of us, isn't it? We want to do what we want to do. Isn't that right? Isn't that right? Yeah. Sylvester Madison, him and a friend of his, about 10 years old, were playing ball, and one of them hit a baseball in the window, and it burst a window, and they looked around to see if anyone saw it, and no one saw it, so they were not going to tell. And then they realized his younger brother saw it. So they try to bribe him and say, well, we'll give you this candy if you won't tell. He said, uh-uh. So they increased it, said, well, we'll give you this plus this if you won't tell. He said, uh-uh. So he said, well, what do you want? We'll give you what you want. He said, I want to tell. That's what I want. By nature, we want to sin. That's it. And as we'll see, this unfolds, just that old saying that I always say, but it, absolutely, this is what this verse means. Whatever's in the well comes up in the bucket. Well, did you do that? Oh, okay. Thank you. Finn said, we have so many technical problems. I wonder if that's what that means. Anyway, whatever's in the well comes up in the bucket. And that's exactly what we're going to see, because there has to be a change in our heart from what we were born with if we ever intend to see God. And I'm not talking about a vision that you see God somewhere in a corn muffin or something like that, you know. I'm talking about we can see him here on this earth through things, but I'm talking about eventually when we see him in heaven. But he says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall be the ones to see God. And we have to understand first, it would be a second nature for us to live by a pure heart. Because our first nature is, I want to do what I want to do. And 90% of the time, that's not what Jesus wants. You know, second nature is something you start to do to where it's just something you do, like walking. By the time you get, what, 6 or 7 years old, walking is second nature. You don't think about it anymore. You know, it's just part of the way you do. And pure in heart means we start with a new heart that Jesus gives us, but we have to learn how to walk that to where it's second nature. And we don't even have to stop and think, should I do that? We already know that's not what we're supposed to do. It becomes second nature. You didn't have to start it anyway. Well, we're not going to wait on it. If you just get your hand out, there's a couple of things I'm going to read once we get the line back up. You know, I was looking at the first heart transplant. Was a lot earlier than I thought. It was actually in 1967 in Africa is where the first one took place. It was only successful for a while. The man did not live that long afterwards, but he did live a little while. And since then, we've gotten better at that, taking a heart out of one human being, putting another, and it operate. Basically, that's what Jesus says. We have to have a heart transplant, a pure heart, because our natural heart that we're born with is diseased. It's called sin. And that has to be changed, because we'll see. When we talk about the heart here, it's not just a heart pumper, it's the central control unit in our system. It causes us to say what we say, to look at what we look at, to listen to what we listen to go where we go. Everything else is controlled by our heart. It's basically what we would now refer to as the seat of our emotions, or the thing that controls us, our character. So he says it has to be pure if you ever intend to see God. But change is tough. You know, and here's the problem with too many religious systems, and boy, we have it today. It's always been a problem. where we think if we can just do the externals okay, that everything else is all right. As long as I treat you right, I can still hate you and it's all right. But that's not all right. Because eventually, given the right opportunity, if I hate you in my heart, when the opportunity comes, I'll hurt you. So that's why Jesus said, you know, if you hate someone inside, you're just basically the same thing as a murderer from your attitude. So that's why he says, only a pure in heart person will be able to see God. You know, I looked and I found that if you work for the railroad, you can't answer this, all right? Who in here knows the distance between rails on a railroad? Anyone know what it is? The distance between one rail to the other rail? It's 4 foot 8 inches and a half. You say, how did we come to that? It's kind of crazy how that came. You know what happened? They followed the roads that were already made for the wagons. And the wagon's wheels were based on 4 foot 18 inches and a half. You say, well, how did that start? Because everything else before it, you know, the railroads in the United States were really started by the British expatriates that came over here. But everything over there, they followed the roads that were already settled, and they were based on 4 foot 8 inch and a half. And you go back and you keep looking at it, and what happened was the Romans laid all the foundation roads over in that part of the world. And they built the roads so that 4 foot 8 inches and a half chariot wheel would run on it. Why? Because it fit perfect behind two war horses. Nobody's changed it. Isn't that amazing? Sometimes you have to make the change happen. It doesn't just say, well, and this is the way it works. People will say, well, you know, that's the way I am now. I can live like a pagan now, and then I'm going to just trust Jesus, and he's going to fix it all over there. That's not the way it works. And that's exactly what this says. The pure in heart now are the only ones that will see Jesus now or then. You can't just say, well, you know, that's just where it's going to be now, and he'll fix it all over there one day. That's not the way it works. That's what we're going to look at today. Are we going to get it going again, guys? Are we close? I'll hold off if we are, because I really want to show them how hard change comes. There we go. Thank you. Will we see God? That's the question. Do you have a pure heart? Do I have a pure heart? That's the whole question he says. He says, only those with a pure heart are the ones that see God. Here's how hard change is. How many Baptists does it take to change a light bulb? Change? What are you talking about change? We're not going to change anything. Isn't that right? We don't change anything. If the horse is dead, we don't get off of it. We just stay on it. It don't matter. How many members of an established Bible teaching church does it take? Over 20 years old, does it take to change a light bulb? One to actually change a bulb, and nine to say how much they like the old one. Some of you are that way. Oh, man, we sure missed that. What did children ever say? Oh, we want to go back to Egypt. We miss those onions and those cucumbers. Who in the world wants to eat an indigestible cucumber? Oh, we miss that. We want to go back. And then what goes? How many Calvinists does it take? I don't know. Are any of y'all Calvinists in here? They believe everything is predetermined, okay? You don't have a choice. You don't have any say-so. God in his sovereignty predestinates everything. You know, I believe in some of that, but not all of that. Here's what they say. None. God has already predestined when a light will go on. Or Calvinists do not change the light bulbs. They just simply read the instructions and pray that a light bulb is the chosen one to be changed, all right? That's extreme, I know. How many charismatics does it take? That thing is throwing my whole siding off. It was centered a few minutes ago. How many charismatics does it take? Only one, since their hands are already up in the air. And they're right, if you're charismatic, no offense. Or 10, one to change the light bulb and nine to pray against the spirit of darkness. Change. For you and I to change is tough. Jesus has to start it. But here's the question. Do you intend to see God? If you do, you have to have a pure heart. And your actions reveal if your heart is pure or not. You know, that's exactly what Jesus said. You'll know them by this. You'll know them by that. If that's the way it goes. Whatever's in the well comes up in the bucket. It's always the way it's been. It will be. I'm going to go hurry on through these. Oh, yeah, let me back up this one. Debbie was an independent Baptist when I married her. I don't know if you know anything about independent Baptists. There's nothing wrong with them. They just like a lot of rules. You know? How many independent? That ought to give you a sign. Independent. Okay, you know what that means, independent? How many independent fundamentalists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, because any more might result in too much cooperation. Her pastor was independent of the independents, so I know exactly what that is about. How many liberals does it take? At least 10, as they need to have a debate on whether or not the light bulb even exists. Boy, that's where we are now. Not just liberal theologians, but liberal in just the secular world. Even if they agree upon the existence of the light bulb, they still might not change it to keep some from alienating those who might use other forms of light. Well, we can't offend him. We'd rather offend you. Ain't that right? Especially if you're believing anything. Let me hurry up to the last one. How many United Methodists? Y'all have any Methodists in here? No offense, okay? How many United Methodists does it take to change a light bulb? This was the statement issued. We choose not to make a statement either in favor or against the need for a light bulb. I know a lot of Baptists this way. However, if you're on your own journey, you have found that a light bulb works for you, that's fine. You're invited to write a poem or compose a modern dance about your personal relationship with your light bulb or light source or non-dark resource. And present it next month at our illuminating ceremony. It went off the screen. Sorry about that. they did come back. Excuse me. In which we will explore a number of light bulb traditions, including incandescent and everything else. All right? I know that's extreme. Change is tough. But Jesus said, unless your heart is changed, you will not see him. Now or in the not yet. And when Jesus comes, he says, the kingdom is already here, but yet it hasn't finished yet. Remember, we went through this some time back, and when we were looking at the where Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives talking to his disciples, he says, the kingdom has already started, and theologians have stumbled all over this the whole time. He just says, it has started, it had a starting point, but it hasn't finished yet. So he has started his rule in our lives, but his rule is not complete on this earth yet until he sets foot back again on the Mount of Olives one day right before the tribulation and all that happens there, okay? Will we see God? That's the question. Do you have any intention? And if you just want to put eternity in this perspective, or do you want to just see him in life now? This is the question you have to ask. Is your heart right? You have to answer that. I can't answer that for you. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. That's what it is. Blessed are they. The principle says that resemblance to God is a prerequisite for fellowship with him. We cannot really see God unless we become like him. You say, what? We can't become like God? Look at this verse. Purity of heart asks this. Here's who we really are. What is it that we think about when no one else is around, when we quit studying, when we quit doing whatever it is we have to work, when our mind kind of goes in neutral, what controls us? You know, what flashes up there? What are you thinking about? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? That's it. That's who we are. That's exactly what he says. The pure in heart. That's how you evaluate it. He says, whatever things are pure and whatever things are just and whatever things are pure of reproach and of good reputation, think on these things. That's what he says. It describes people who have a pure heart. And the problem is none of us are born with one of those. And the issue is, okay, how we get it, right? Look at John. And every man that has this hope in him, what does it say? Purifies himself. There are things we do. What did Paul tell Timothy? Exercise yourself unto godliness. You don't just trust Jesus one day and then everything's all right. You don't just trust Jesus one day and every bad habit you got is gone. You still have to fight. That's why he says you have to exercise. You have to train yourself. You have a new instinct that's guiding you, but you have to train yourself how to do these things, and the actions will reveal really what's controlling you. You know, it's kind of like pigs and sheep. You wash up a sheep and get him all clean, and he won't run just straight to the mud hole to get back in it. But wash a pig and see what happens. Get him just close to one. What does he do? He wallows in it. That's his nature. That's exactly what it is. In our heart, our instinct, we're going to see how you actually give the definition of it. If the kingdom is then, but it's already now, Jesus says, then I must live now the way I will live then. You don't just live like a pagan now and just say, oh, Jesus is going to fix it all one day when I get to heaven. That's not the way that works. And Jesus, Revelation said that. It says, as you are living now in eternity, that's what it's going to be. It doesn't just an automatic change. That's why he said when he confronts his disciples and those following, and he looks at their life, and they said, we're not interested in changing our life. And so they walked off and left, John chapter 6. To fail to do so is a contradiction of what the kingdom means. Kingdom means rule. Is Jesus guiding my life? Is he ruling in my life? These Beatitudes deal with the character, which means are the attitudes that we are to have since we have a new heart. Quickly, the phrase pure in heart also has to do more with unity or singleness of heart. How many times did Jesus say, you can't serve God and mammon? You can't do this and you can't do that. Love not the world because the love of the Father is not in you if you love the world. 1 John. We see these constantly where there's a challenge. You can't get so consumed with the world and love Jesus at the same time. They just do not go together. It means blessed is that which is unmixed, that your commitment is not separated, that you don't love Jesus over here and love the world the next second, and they just don't go together. Blessed are those who do not have divided hearts, do not have double hearts. You know, James talked about that, right, quite a bit. We cannot hold the world with one hand. Basically, Christendom is this today. We can live just as close to hell as we want to and still go to heaven when we die. That's kind of the going thing now. Oh, Jesus understands. No, he doesn't. He doesn't understand. He says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they are the ones that will see. David was a perfect example. What did God say about David? He is a man after my own heart. Did he say that about anybody else? Nope. You say, well, David was a sinner. Yes, he was. He had one big sin. That's the only one we know about, a big one. That's what we remember him by. But you know what? He was not a hypocrite. He had a sinful heart, but he had a single heart. Why? The moment God confronted him, what did he do? He broke his heart. He repented. You know the verse in Psalm where he says, God, it's you and you only have I sinned against. Now, the repercussions, and this is the way it works. You don't just sin and think, well, that's done. I don't have to worry about it. Repercussions for sin depend on what the sin is, but it's not just one thing. The repercussions from David's sin was with him the rest of his life and Israel for a long, long, long time. What does that mean? You can't sin in a vacuum. You can't sin and it not affect just only you. It always affects a lot of people. But David was that. He was one that God said, he's a man after my own heart. The general tenor of his life was he wanted to do what was right. Even when he could have killed Saul. Even when he did, he said, oh no, I want to do what God said. You're the Lord's anointed. That's exactly what you see. When confronted with his wrongdoing, he never offered out about, well, you know, it's her fault. Well, it's his fault. He said, I sinned. He didn't try to blame Bathsheba. He didn't try to blame anybody else. He said, it's mine. It's mine. He had a single heart. He knew that. And that's exactly what that means. A pure in heart is a single focused heart. It's not so consumed with the world and everything else the world has to offer. He said, against you and you only have a sin. Now, our heart, quickly. The heart is the core of our individual self. We might call it our emotions, our psyche, our soul, whatever you want to put there. From a Hebrew perspective, from a Greek perspective, it references, it's talking about the controlling mechanism of us. You know, what is it that controls me? It's the CPU, it's the central processing unit in me, as it is in a computer. It's talking about the master control center in my life. That is what it is. It is the part of us that dictates our character. That's why we do what we do whenever no one's looking, because that is what is controlling us. It dictates our will and dominates our affections. Look at this verse. Keep your heart. It means watch your heart. Guard your heart with all diligence. Look at the rest of it. For out of it are the issues of life. How you treat your parents is a heart issue. How you treat your children is a heart issue. How you work where you work is a hard issue. How you manage the people that work for you is a hard issue. How you study for school is a hard issue. Everything is a hard issue. That's exactly what it says. For everything comes out of that. Whatever's in the well, it comes up in the bucket. That's the way it is. If you're going to be pure, you must be pure in heart first. You know, how many times have I heard people say, You know, I know the boy's a pagan. He's an alcoholic. And they say, oh, but he's got a good heart. No, he doesn't. If he had a good heart, he wouldn't be a pagan. Ain't it right? That's exactly what they say. Oh, but he has a good heart. No, he doesn't have a good heart. If he has a pure heart, he wouldn't be doing that. And I'm not talking about perfection. I'm talking about the general tenor of our life is we'll flow out of that the things that Jesus said was good. We'll see them in a moment. We are born with a heart problem. Did you know that? All of us. We have a heart problem. Look at what Jeremiah says. The heart is deceitful and wicked. Who can know it? Above all things. Actually, he uses the same word in chapter 15, verse 8. And he says, it's an incurable ill. The same word's translated. Deceitfully wicked. He means I have a problem that catechism can't fix, that baptism can't fix, that offerings can't fix, that the preacher can't fix. I have a heart problem that only Jesus can fix. That's what that means. You can't do enough external to change your heart. Look what it says. The biblical word here literally means incurably sick. We're born that way. It's called sin. It's called depravity. I know a lot of people don't believe that. A lot of denominations said, oh, no. We're not born that way. We can do anything without God. No, we can't. Romans says that. Unless God does something first, nobody responds. Because in our depravity, we don't. We just want us. All of the spiritual exercise and all of the spiritual diet in the world will not change your heart. It will not. Given the opportunity, you still do the same thing. He gave us a list of sins and said that, listen, the things that defile a man come out of the man. Whoa. What does that mean? Let's read it. For from within, out of the what of men? The heart. Why? Because that's the master control center. Out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All of these evil things come from within. What does that mean? Because you were born with a bad heart, and I was born with a bad heart. So when he says only the pure in heart, means you got to have something done about it that you can't do yourself. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. All sins are residual and potential in every human being. You know, have you ever thought about it? If you've made a commitment to Christ and you're trying to be obedient, and you have to learn that, okay? You don't just one day wake up after you trust Jesus and you do everything right. It doesn't work that way. You understand what he wants, and then with his power of the Holy Spirit, you start disciplining yourself to do the right thing until it becomes second nature. Why did he say that? Exercise yourself unto godliness. You have to work on that, all right? And in potential in every human heart. You ever thought about it? When something happens to you, you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic and you say something and you think all of a sudden, my goodness, I didn't know I had that in me. Isn't that amazing? Why? Because it's in all of us. It says that. Everything that defiles us comes from inside of us. Not just the outside. That's exactly what it is. Everything that we see wrong in the world, every evil thing that goes on anywhere starts in someone's heart and it comes out of that. That's exactly what he says. The diagnosis of the heart is this. Look what Jeremiah continues to say. The Lord, search the heart. I try the reins. Wow. You know what reins are on a horse, right? What do you do with reins? You control them if it's a sensible horse. If it's not a sensible horse, you have a two before, right? You ever had one of those? Sometimes you just have to get their attention. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I don't abuse animals, but some of them are just stubborn, you know. I try the reins. Look at it. I will look at what's controlling you, God says. What's controlling you? What everybody else is doing your age? What the government says you need to do? What's controlling you? What tells you how to raise your children? What tells you how to treat the people that work for you? That's what that means. He said, I, the Lord, search the heart and try the reins. Because we have to remember, our heart is the master control center. It tells us where to go, what to listen to, how to treat people. It tells us everything. And God says, I'll try that. How does he try that? God allows circumstances to come in our life so that God knows what's going to happen, so that we can see. So when you do that thing that you back up and you say, whoa, I didn't know I had that in me. Then you understand you need to work on it. You know, God knows Job. God told Satan, I know what he's going to do. He knows what we're going to do. But he says, you need to see, you know, when you say, oh, no, I got it all fixed, and then that happens and you blow up and you back up, if you're evaluating yourself, you say, wait a minute, I need to do something about this. That's exactly what it means. If your actions do not prove what you are, your reactions will. How do you handle when someone offends you? You know, I read, it was in the Reader's Digest, you know, they tell these little true stories. And this guy years ago was taking a driver's ed course in school. And I can't imagine the driver's ed course in New York. Can you? I can't. And the guy was taking his driving. He had taken all the class, but he was actually taking the driving test. And his instructor was sitting over there, and he goes up to the red light, and somebody bams up behind him, and he doesn't say anything, hits him from the rear, just a bump, and the instructor sitting over here just shaking his head. And so he pulls out at the red light, and somebody cuts him off, and the boy just grits his teeth, doesn't say anything, doesn't do anything, and looks over there, and the instructor just shaking his head. So finally, even worse, when someone comes into the side and cuts him off, he just slams on the horn real loud. He said, now you're getting it. Now you're getting it. That's the way it is. It's in there. And if we're not careful, when it comes out, it reminds us what is controlling us. So God allows some of these circumstances so that we can see. We need to submit to his authority. Why? Because when that comes out, that means our heart's not what it's supposed to be. It needs some work on it still. A heart transplant. Look at Jeremiah. Heal me, O Lord, and I shall be healed. Save me, and I shall be saved, for you are my praise. You can't change your heart. You know, if you're an alcoholic and all you do is quit drinking, you'll just go to hell sober. That's the only thing that changes. You know, that's it. If all we do is just clean up the outside, if there's not something driving us from the inside, then our heart hasn't been changed. And then we do not have a pure heart. And therefore, he says, we will not see him. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. When we trust Christ and ask for forgiveness, he then saves us, and he gives us a new heart. You know, it's the closest thing I understand to it is, you know, when you have animals, certain animals are born with a certain instinct in them, okay? If it's a bird dog, or if it's a duck dog, whatever, if they have that in them, then you can get it out of them. You know, you can help them get it out where they can use it. But, you know, I've never seen a bulldog point birds. I don't know, do they? I don't think they can smell far enough because their nose is all mashed in, ain't it, most of them? I know what bulldogs are for, but it's not for that. And I don't care how much time you spend on him, you'll never get pointing birds out of him. Why? Because it's just not in him. Jesus gives us a new instinct, a new heart. But that's what Paul, he told him. He said, you got to develop it. You got to learn by exercise how to manage it. You know, I trained some bird dogs, trained a few coon dogs. Some of them ain't worth it, you know, because it ain't in them. You know, that's when my bear hunting buddy, he said he'd just go ahead and buy a dog rather than go through 100 of them to find one. Why? Because they said if they don't have it, they don't have it. And I don't have time to go through 100 dogs. I'll spend whatever $1,000 I need to get a good one. Let somebody else go through that. That's exactly what it is. How many people think just because they put a good show on the outside that they're right with God and everything's going to be okay? And they're going to stand before Jesus one day and he says, depart from me, I never knew who you are. Oh, but we did this on the outside. He said, I'm sorry. We prophesied. We cast out demons. He said, I don't know who you are. Why? Because our heart wasn't right. That's it. He then saves us and gives us a new heart. And we can't be pure. You know, when there's alloy in the metal, it's not pure. When you dilute milk down to skim milk, it's not pure, is it? Just throw it out. That's what you do with skim milk. Give that to the dog or something, right? All it is colored water, ain't it? Really, what is skim milk? What percent? Nothing is what it is. You know, did you know how Ivory soap came about? You know, they still advertise it's what, 98.7% pure? You know how they still advertise it? Something like that. You know how that stuff came about? It was a fluke. How it floats. Did you ever see how it floats? It was a fluke that the guy put air in the system that day, and then before they knew it, it had already gone out on the market, and he didn't even know it. And then everybody said, we love this wonderful soap that floats. Is it the only one that floats? Yeah. I remember the first time I saw it, 1970, they were building a bridge down there over the Geechee River at Geechee Landing. And, you know, before then, we were all crossing on a big wooden bridge. And the guy that was down there building a bridge, he was out there taking a bath, and he had a white bar of soap, and it was floating. I'd never seen one before. I'm kidding. I ain't kidding. 1970. And I said, look at that. He said, oh, yeah, that's why we buy ivory, because it floats. We can wash out here in the river, and it doesn't sink. 98.7% pure. 98.7% won't work. What does God demand? Be ye holy, for I am holy, 100%. And you can't do that in a religious system or anything else. You don't get it that way. He saves us and gives us a new heart. Now, look, here's how that works, okay? You say, well, how do I do that? It's very, very simple. He's already outlined it in the Beatitudes. Here's how you start. Number one, first, you see yourself as bankrupt and have nothing that you can offer to God that would demand him accept you. I don't care what you got. I don't care how much money what you've done. None of that works. You're bankrupt and you come. It says what? The poor in spirit. And then the first one that we looked at. And then second is this. When you see that, you're broken. And it says what? You're the mourners. Blessed are the mourners, for they shall be comforted. They see their situation and they're heartbroken over the fact that there's nothing they can do that God would have to accept them. Number three. Third, you yield yourself to that, the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. You submit yourself to his will. Everything that's in this process is exactly what it takes to have a pure heart. Fourth, you have a hunger for God. It says what? Those who hunger and thirst after righteousness will be filled. He laid it out. And the righteousness is what? Not just good works, it's Jesus himself. Because we looked at the verse a few weeks ago. You have a hunger and a thirst for the Lord Jesus himself. Fifthly, he gives you mercy. What does that mean? He gives you something that you absolutely do not deserve. And nothing you can do to deserve it. Period. And here's the good part about that. We understood, when we understand how much mercy we receive, we can show mercy to someone else. That's what he said. Blessed are the merciful, for they will, what? Show mercy. You'll learn how to do it. Number six, he does a work in our heart that gives us a new heart. Baptism can't do that. Catechism can't do that. Church membership can't do that. Only Jesus can do that. When we trust him, he gives us a brand new heart. A pure heart. It's a work that only he can do. No one else can do that. Only Jesus can give us a brand new heart. It all begins and ends with him. Wow. So what does that mean? When our heart is right, we'll see him. Well, how are we going to see him? This is not exhaustive, okay? We'll see him in circumstances. When you bury a loved one, you can still see God in it. When you see your grandchildren, you can see God in it. You can be out there in the nature, not worshiping a tree, but you can see God's hand in it. You see him. Well, he's all in all of it. You see him in the scriptures. In that, he becomes a bright and living reality to us. It's not some distant God over there on the hill who gives us mandates to live by. You know, that's why the Jews said when they came down, when Moses came down, they said, oh, no. We don't want God talking to us in thundering and lightnings. Because that's what he was doing. You just talk to him, then you come to us. And when Jesus comes on the scene and he says, Abba, Father, that means dad. They didn't know how to take that. Because God was always distant. You know, I was talking with a guy this week, raised a Catholic, doesn't go to church anymore, and just not important to him anymore. Just kind of went through the motions. Went to Catholic school all his life, and now he's probably 50 years old. And don't go, it's really not a thing anymore. It's just one of those things you go through. It doesn't mean anything. A pure heart is a relationship with Jesus that affects you. It's not just something you just throw down. I guess it's just like a lot of people. It's just a habit. If they happen to be in the habit to go and serve Jesus or do something, it's just a habit, and they get out of the habit, and they don't do it anymore. That's not what this is. The pure in heart is, the heart is there, and it will always come out. Look at this verse. By faith, Moses forsook Egypt, Remember, he was a leader in Egypt under Pharaoh. He ran, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Wow. That's why we don't get so caught up in all this world stuff. Why? Because you're looking way beyond that. You're seeing something that no one else can see because your heart is right. But if your heart's right, you're not going to see him. You're not going to see him in the death of a loved one. You're not going to see him when you lose your job. You're not going to see him when you lose your house. You're not going to see him when everything else falls apart if your heart's not right. And by the way, this same guys, he found out I was a preacher, and he said, "You going to tell all your people Sunday to not shake hands?" And I said, "No, we huggers. We probably won't quit until somebody in our congregation gets coronavirus or whatever it is. What is it? Corona? Corolla? Corolla? Datsun? Nissan? What is it?" You have to be careful. Don't be foolish. Okay? It's the same thing. Just like you don't want to get the regular flu, you don't want this. But listen, the media takes everything out of this world. All right? If you want a fist bump in here, fist bump. I don't care what you do. I ain't going to tell you what to do. Until one of y'all get it, I'm going to still probably shake your hand. Then I might shake your hand and just go get me a wipe if you can find them. They all sold out of the stores, you know, by the way. Right? Just wash your hands. Just use common sense. Don't get hysterical because the media is hysterical. Because someone who is involved in this stuff said it's way overrated. You know, we have to be serious. I'm not saying not be serious, but don't get crazy, all right? Because still, who's in control? Jesus is still in control. Just use your brain. That's all. For he saw something that was invisible. How is it the world looks at us when we handle all these difficulties? Because we see something they don't see. We see God in a way because Jesus has purified our hearts. And that's the only way you see it. You don't see it any other way. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Look at this one. The light of the body is the eye. Therefore, when your eye is single, what does that mean? You're not consumed with the world. You're not trying to make all the money the world has. You don't have to have all the vehicles the world has. You don't have to have the house the world says. When you're a single focus, like Paul said, he said, "This one thing I do. I'm forgetting about all this other stuff, and I'm facing forward to Jesus Christ." Philippians chapter 3. Your eye is single, your whole body is full of light. But when your eye is evil, your body is also full of darkness. Wow. A one thing focus. That's what a pure heart is. And it starts by Jesus giving us. When you trust Christ, he starts it, and then the process goes. Leo Tolstoy told a story, and he entitled the story, "How Much Land Does a Man Need?" And in the story, he said this was this very wealthy farmer. This was a long, long, long time ago. He said this very wealthy farmer who had a lot of land already was offered this opportunity. And they offered him, they says, "We will give you all the land when you leave at sunup and you walk as far as you can walk or run, and all the land you cover as long as you make it back to this spot before sundown is yours. You can have it." So sure enough, he gets ready, he takes off, and man, he's going and he's going and he's going, and he walks as hard as he can, and then he runs, and he sees the days getting past, and time goes on, and he's just greedy, and he keeps going and keeps going until he finally figures out, man, I better turn around and get back, or I'm not going to make it. So he breaks his neck, and he sees the sun going down, so, you know, he's going beyond what his body could handle, and he's running and he's running and he's trying to get back, and he falls over the line with blood running out of his mouth and his nose, and he dies. He says, "How much land does a person need?" "About a 6x3. His servant buried him. A one single focus. A pure heart focuses on the things of Jesus and constantly has to weed out everything else on the side, because it will always try to overcome us. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we just thank you that you love us. Lord, we thank you that you're patient. We thank you that you will do what only you can do in changing our heart. Lord, and you give us guidelines as to what our responsibilities are after that, to learn how to be obedient. Father, thank you. Thank you for taking care of us, providing for everything that we need in this life, and a promise that we will see you one day. In Jesus' name we thank you. Amen.